This podcast is brought to you by Soapbox. Start your own podcast today at www.soapbox.host.
Telepathic, breastplated reptoid gas attendants, and full schizo Italian security guard disappearances on this Wednesday at 9 p.m. I am joined tonight by Nick and Aaron, and special guest, friend of the show, Cameron. Cameron, hello. How are you doing?
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me. Long time enjoyer of the show. It's going to be fun.
Definitely. So before we begin, I want to quick do shout out. So I'm going to start. Shout out to Sarah in the other room. Probably upset that we're not hanging out with her at the moment. And that's all for me. How about you guys?
Shout out to, of course, my mother, who will listen to this when it comes out. She stopped by the other day and she was like, you know, I wanted to listen to the episode, but my phone wasn't connecting to the car. So I was like, well, that's fine.
Wow, what a supporter.
I know, right?
I would also like to shout out Nick's mom, as well as my own mother. I hope they enjoy this episode.
I got a couple shout outs. Well, there's one shout out that Nick missed to Troy.
Oh, sure.
From Nick, of course.
Yes.
Like you do.
Yes.
And a shout out to my fiance, Fallon, of course.
Of course.
Are we still shouting out David Hoy, or is he still a super fan?
Yes.
Has he been listening?
I don't know.
Can you tell?
We'll message you on LinkedIn. Don't worry.
Yeah, I'll message you, David. I will say that's a perfect segue. This podcast, Wednesday at 9 p.m., is now sponsored by Soapbox. Soapbox podcast hosting. Host your podcast on Soapbox. Disclaimer, I am Soapbox.
You didn't have to say that.
Are you embezzling yourself?
Yes. No.
I'm calling the IRS.
I'm paying. Yeah, it's complicated. No. But yeah, if anyone ever listens to this in the future and wants to host their own podcast, go to soapbox.host.
They're already going to know about it. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, Soapbox. That's what everyone's using these days.
That's true. The TV ads. I think we're going to get a Super Bowl ad for next year lined up.
Endorsed by Donald J. Trump.
Super Bowl is overrated.
and Kamala Harris.
Gotta get Mr. Beast.
Where you get a
sponsor one of those videos. Yeah, sponsor one of those videos.
Feastables X Soapbox.
Yeah.
Perfect. Coming to your Walmart. It's going to taste like soap.
Yeah.
Before I get into the story, I want to ask you guys really quickly what your perspective is on tonight's topic. I just want to know going in, and then we'll see if it changes at all. I'm not expecting it to change, but starting with Nick and then Aaron and Cameron, what is your perspective on UFOs and aliens?
In brief, I've heard of this a little bit, this encounter. It's insane. When I first heard about it, didn't really know what to make of it. I still don't. So I as our friend Aaron, not this one, but Mysterious Universe Aaron says, maybe sometimes they're not like extraterrestrials. Maybe they're like ultra terrestrials. I'm like, you know what? I like that a lot more. It makes more sense. So I'm hoping for that.
Got it. How about you, Aaron?
Well, aside from my usual stance of they're just cows on ladders.
Yes.
I don't know. I am skeptical of them for no reason. Like, I don't really have a good reason.
I think it's a good reason just to be baseline very skeptical, right?
Yeah, I mean, what's so great about Earth that they're coming from wherever? Like, clearly they're not in our observable little universe. Otherwise, we would have seen them. And if they can possess the technology to come see us, why?
That's why they're ultra-terrestrials, not extraterrestrials. Well,
Hold that thought. Cameron, how about you? And don't hold back. Don't be nice.
Oh, I have a couple thoughts here. So one, I grew up watching Doctor Who, the new Who. And
what's new Who?
It's like the new incarnation of Doctor Who started like 2006.
Okay.
So in my opinion, aliens gotta exist. There's almost no way that they don't exist. The universe is so fucking big. But the other thing is, how have we never seen an alien? And so there's actually a couple theories out there of why that might be. One of them being all other alien civilizations have realized that they should not be making noise, and any civilizations that have made noise, such as our own, have been wiped out by some extremely powerful extraterrestrial warlike nation that have respond to our signals and then destroy the planet. And that's why we don't hear anything else. People are like hiding to not get destroyed.
So we're going to get destroyed soon?
It's possible. It's entirely possible. We've just been broadcasting radio waves out for decades at this point.
That's a happy thought.
Yeah. So also, my friends want me to start my schizophrenic journey, and I think it starts here tonight.
I think it does.
This is a really good one to start with.
Yeah, I kind of forgot how crazy this story was until, because you know, my memory is like a
rock,
walnut,
goldfish.
I forgot. Anyway, let's.
That's a funny joke. Keep that in there.
Thank you. Yeah, that was yes, that was on purpose.
Yeah, okay.
Must have not been that funny.
Anyway, so we have yet to discuss UFOs and aliens on this podcast. Well, a little bit because
we did do Cowboy Bigfoot.
Yes, we did do Bigfoot, which touched on aliens. Did you know that? Did you know Bigfoot is related to UFOs?
No. Him and aliens are related. They're cousins.
Okay. Yeah, there's actually a lot of connections between Bigfoot and UFOs. I'll say a lot of people silo themselves. They're like, I'm a Bigfoot person, but I'm not an alien person, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. But if you take a step back, there's a lot of weird connections between different paranormal, let's say paranormal phenomena, I think is interesting. So keep that in mind as we listen today, because I'm going to try to avoid the word alien here, because you'll see. I don't really know if that's what describes this, but this is the first time we're doing a story about this, and I want to give a little bit of background context. We're going to be talking about UFOs and aliens tonight, and there are plentiful boring UFO stories. There's, you know, stories are a dime a dozen, but they're like, I went outside and I saw a glowing orb in the sky, and then it moved way too fast, faster than it should have. Ooh, whatever.
That's 98% of them.
That is 98% of them, and they're definitely just like airplanes, right? So
you know, you would think that in the modern day, when everybody has a high resolution camera on their phone, we would be seeing more evidence of Bigfoot and of cryptids and of extraterrestrials.
Why do you think so?
Because everybody has access to it at all times. Previously, you know, you would be like, oh my God, there's Bigfoot. And then, well, I guess I got to tell my buddy down at the bar, it's all Bigfoot.
That's
and now
fair.
You can just whip it out and here's my phone. So you would think we'd see more pictures of aliens. But if anything, the quality of images has gone down.
Frank, would you care to give the typical response?
I'll give the apologetics response. So what if the things that these phenomena are more intelligent than us? Like, they are above us in intelligence, so that they can just avoid, like, it's like you experiment on, like, they are aware of what technology we have to capture them. And so they can just avoid.
So Bigfoot's an omnipotent.
Like, Bigfoot, cryptid. As long as I'm looking forward, Bigfoot could be behind me and I wouldn't know. Like, even if I had a camera and I'm turning around, there could always be a Bigfoot behind me. You know what I mean?
You're getting into, like, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it type shit.
That's true.
It's like, you know, the furthest point in front of you is the closest point behind you. You know what I mean?
Furthest point.
Wow.
I'm just going to coin the term Bigfoot arms race. I think they Bigfoot are also. Yes, they're developing technology to stop our technology.
Like stealth technology?
Well, oh, that's why they've got stealth technology.
They've advanced so quickly. What the history books don't tell you, the Amish Bigfoot War of 1981.
That's so true. Cameron, you have to come back when we do an episode on the Amish Bigfoot War.
I'll be back, but like, how do we ever capture them on film back in the day then? Checkmate.
I don't know. Are you saying we have or we haven't?
I mean, the original pictures were on film.
The Bigfoot stuff? Like the Patterson Gimli film?
Is that
the classic one? Yeah. Like the classic, like whatever? I think that's a guy in a suit. So TBH.
Then they're all guys in suits.
No.
And there's just less suits being
taken. Like a big episode of Scooby-Doo.
Big feet. Yeah. That's the term they prefer. Are robot slaves of UFOs that get dropped off on this planet to do their bidding.
I thought this was like a reputable podcast. Is this how we're starting?
Okay.
The Bigfoot slaves of UFOs.
Let's talk about something much more sensible. Aliens.
Of course.
So, given that there are many, many boring stories, I wanted our first UFO and alien story to be something you can really sink your teeth into. So even if you don't believe in UFOs and alien abductions, you can still just enjoy the ride. tonight's story is one of the most insane ones I've ever heard. Let's dive in. The traditional start date of the UFO age is 1947, right? Lots of people know about Roswell. Roswell, New Mexico. UFO crashes there, supposedly.
TV show.
Is it really? Started watching that Roswell in the apartment years ago?
Ryan, maybe?
Like me and Wolf, or me and Ryan, or something. Did you see it?
No, but I know that it exists.
Yeah, so that's the classic start. That same year, Kenneth Arnold in Washington, Mount Rainier, that's how you say it, also had an encounter. That's the start of the age. That's only about, was that 80 years ago? Is my math right?
About.
Now, it took a few decades, 1961, really, with the seminal Betty and Barney Hill incident in New Hampshire, which is an episode from the time. That's a classic. Our story tonight takes place across the pond, though, in the land of my ancestors, Italy.
Albania.
In 1978.
I'm also from Italy. Here we go.
Yes, Karen. I also thought it was a nice coincidence. You're also Italian.
We all are.
Oh, my God. We've all got Italian blood in us.
It'll be good. Italy's good.
That's great.
This could happen to us.
If we visit the metropolitan city of Genoa, which is in the northwest region of Italy, Liguria.
I've been there.
Oh, you've been there.
I've been here, yeah.
Do you have any missing time? Did you ever like wake up like and realize like where did the past 2 hours go and you were naked and afraid on the floor?
You know, outside? We were in Liguria on the coast and we were doing like this hike along the sea and my sister passed out. So maybe that was evidence of alien activity.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So I thought the metropolitan city of Genoa was the same as Genoa. Genoa, it's not. It's like a province. Genoa is the capital city. So we're talking about like a big province in the region of Liguria in the northwest of Italy. There is a small town about a 50-minute drive from the city of Genoa named Torriglia. Am I pronouncing that right?
Close enough, I think so.
Which, after these events and some other events in the 70s, became known as the UFO capital of Italy. And it's pretty small, and its economy is mostly based on agriculture and cattle. And at least according to the satellite and street view of Google Maps, it's a beautiful region, and maybe Cameron can confirm. It's quite hilly and mountainous.
Yeah, I mean, we've been there a couple times, especially along the coast, and it's just all mountains, and it's impossible to go anywhere by car. It's all switchbacks, so you really got to see it by either boat or by train, and it's a beautiful region.
I would love to visit. And so, yeah, I'd imagine it's probably quite treacherous, and that factors in to some of the encounters tonight. Pierre Fortunato Zanfreda, 26 years old, was a married man and father of two when this takes place in 1978. He worked as a nighttime guard for a private security company in the region, Vigilance Val Bisagno, which still exists to this day. And he often patrolled Torriglia, among some other towns. The night of December 6th, 1978 was a dark and moonless night. It had snowed during the day, so a dangerous layer of ice was left on the roads. Zanfreda was in his patrol car, a Fiat 126, which
we'll put that in the show notes.
Is in the show notes, and there's picture of it if you guys are on the Notion. It's a cute little car.
That's the patrol car.
This is the patrol car. Maybe it was probably, you know, branded. This is not his actual one. This is a Fiat 126. And the picture above that is a picture of him. So he's a young man at the time, actually very close in age to us. So keep that in mind. But he is married with two children at this point.
Much like you.
Much like the four of us, yeah.
Much like the four of us. And so he's in this tiny little, cute little Fiat, and he's approaching one of his clients' empty country house in the area of Marzano, which is actually right outside Torriglia to the south. Now, I picture that he's driving very slowly, very carefully, given the darkness and the treacherous road conditions at night.
And the terrible car he's driving.
And the crappy little car. See, it looks like it sounds like it was an extremely popular car back in the day.
I mean, it's still probably pretty popular today, at least like the updated models.
Yeah,
Everybody Fiat's over there.
I think it was like a Polish, or was it, I don't know, made in Poland. I don't know. Isn't that an Italian company?
I do not know.
Who knows?
Isn't fiat Italian?
Yeah, there's something. If you, there's a link to the Wikipedia in the show notes, because I put a link for every single thing I glance at in the show notes. So yeah,
it was founded in Italy.
Gotcha.
In 1899.
Wow. Wow. So yeah, cute little car. And it's shortly after midnight, and he's right near the home he was meant to patrol when his car suddenly stopped dead. Now, not like it ran out of fuel. Everything immediately shut off. The engine, the lights, the radio, for no apparent reason. Now, in that same moment, he noticed four strange lights moving about in the house's garden. Now, his job is to be a security guard and to patrol the unoccupied house. So he's like, are there thieves that are going to be breaking in? This is my job. So he's pretty brave, even though he's like, wow, there's four lights. That could be four people. He gets out of his car with a gun and a flashlight in hand, and he slowly approaches, thinking that the burglars were behind the house. He stepped through the open gate and crept along a wall, planning to, you know, jump out and surprise them. So slowly he stepped, about to peer around the corner, when he felt something or someone grab his shoulder from behind. He spun around thinking he was caught by the thieves, but was immediately horrified at what he saw, because only inches from him stood what he called, quote, an enormous, green, ugly, and frightful creature with undulating skin no less than 10 feet tall. And in his panic, he shone his flashlight at the creature's face, but he was so terrified, he dropped it at his feet, quickly composed himself to his credit, picked it back up, and booked it out of there, just sprinting for his life. And as he's running away from this thing, he becomes aware of a really large, bright light behind him. I'm assuming he sees the, you know, the huge, the shadow cast in front of him and, you know, the light encompassing behind him. And he turns and he sees a huge, flat, triangular form that shone so bright it was nearly blinding him. And he raises his arm to shield his face and watches in awe as it lifts up from the back of the house, and it's bigger than the entire house. And it's emitting a strange hissing sound, and it just disappears into the night sky. He stumbles back to his little Fiat, and he can contact via the radio operator of the security company. And so he frantically does that. And Carlo Toccolino, who was the radio operator at the time, has testified that at 12:15 a.m. that night, he received a call from Zanfretta, who was excited and just completely discombobulated, disconnected in his speech, repeating over and over, "My God, they are ugly." And Carlo, assuming that he's getting attacked, is like, who are they? Are these men? They're attacking you? And all he could sputter was, ready for some Italian?
Yeah, right.
No. Non sono uomini, non sono uomini.
That's good.
Which is, no, they are not men. Before the call was just cut off. Carlo, the radio operator, was like, what the hell is going on with Zanfretta?
What the shagma?
No, I'm leaving that in. I'm leaving that in for you. No. I'm putting it in.
No.
Too late.
It's due. Yeah, you get. So.
No.
Stop clapping. Shoot. Carlo called the chief of security, Lieutenant Giovanni Casiba, and they send a dispatch of a few other guards to go check in on Zanfretta. They're like, he's freaking out. Let's go find him. Now, I'm guessing because of the conditions of the roads and because they were coming from the city of Genoa, which was pretty far away, it took an hour to arrive. And when they arrived and found him, he was lying on the ground, and it was 1:15 a.m. When Zanfretta noticed the guards, who he knew they were his co-workers, he leapt to his feet with his gun and flashlight pointed at them, eyes bulging, apparently not recognizing them. And they called to him, you know, whoa, whoa, drop your weapon. And he was just eyes bulging, refusing to listen. So they rush him and tackle him to the ground and disarm him, because they're like, this guy is going crazy. They're really disturbed to feel that his clothes were really, really warm, despite it being early December in the frigid cold and lying on the ground, which is covered in ice and snow. They also noticed the gate was closed. Now, the really interesting thing about this guy is that all of these encounters, because there are multiple, were extremely well documented. This was reported to the Italian police, the Carabinieri, I think, and they started an investigation, an official investigation, and they sent police out. And one of the very first things they discovered was a clear imprint in the ground of some large and very heavy object behind the house. There were two marks in the icy grass, about 9 feet in diameter, and they were horseshoe shaped. And before you kind of dismiss this all as like, this is all this guy making it up, the local police commander, Antonio Nucci, stated on record at the time that he had every confidence in the testimony provided by Zanfretta, at least about the conscious memories that Zanfretta provided at this time. You know, what he saw, the creature, the light, that he was freaked out. He knew Zanfretta for many years and said of him, quote, "I can state with certainty that he is a clear-thinking man with no strange fantasies in his head. When we went to investigate the scene the next day, he almost didn't want to come. He was so scared. Only something exceptional could have frightened him so." And not only that, but the official police investigation revealed that no fewer than 52 other residents of Torriglia that night saw a bright light in the direction of the country house at the same time Sanfredo was said he was running from the light and saw it ascend into the sky. Now, unsurprisingly, the story made it to the local newspaper, the local media, and he got, you know, a little name for himself, and pretty much everyone dismissed it, and he became the laughingstock of the area. Especially back then, it was quite taboo to talk about UFOs and weird, you know, otherworldly creatures. And so everyone kind of assumed he was crazy and that they've all thought the police had wasted their time in the investigation. It got to a point where he was getting harassed. He'd get constant, nonstop prank phone calls all through the day and night mocking him. Yet everyone who knew him and any investigators who met with him and reporters that met with him and spoke with him all agreed or came to believe that he was a quiet, honest, family man. Even his employer stood up for him, which I feel like is very rare nowadays. Can you imagine, like, people get dropped at like the slightest, you know, infraction? Though they were worried a little bit about the possible negative publicity, right, this association with him would bring their company. And he was quoted at the time as saying, "People call me on the phone at all hours just to play jokes on me. I don't know what it was that I saw, but I saw it. I'm not a liar." Now, before I get into the other details that emerged from that night, I want to pause and ask you guys, what do you make of this first encounter in Torriglia?
First, I have a comment. Frank, imagine the CEO of Walmart coming to your aid after you saw Bigfoot.
It is pretty crazy, right? Like the idea that...
Yeah, I believe you. I saw him too.
Yeah. He shows his like furry arms. He like pulls back his sleeve.
So as you were telling this story, I'm like, okay, but there's this giant object. There's got to be like an imprint. And then you're like, there's an imprint. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, there's an imprint like written down in the police report in Italy at this time.
It seemed like it was like a uniform shape. It wasn't just like he just like stepped really aggressively in a pattern.
Yeah,
like that would take a while and a lot of planning. So to me, that's one of the giveaways that it could be legit.
Yeah, and whether or not, you know, something happened here, all the people that spoke with him, his employer, his coworkers, the police, all believe that he was terrified and in shock, right? Like which is separate from the facts about what he saw or experienced, right? But it was everyone around him was like, this guy is freaked out. He is not pretending to be freaked out. Go ahead, Cameron.
So maybe we have a crazy idea here, right? Imagine this. Imagine it's 1952.
79,
same difference. maybe there's like a few black and white TVs. I don't know if color's out yet.
I don't know. I think so.
Maybe, but it's Italy. Like, it's rural.
Liguria.
Yeah.
You like that?
It's not. Yeah, it was good. Liguria. It was good. Thanks. It's not very modernized yet. What's something really funny to do in the middle of winter when there's no tourism and there's no other people from outside the town around, but pull a gigantic prank and become at least local news, if not more national?
A conspiracy.
They're all in on it.
Are you saying they're all in on
it? All 52 people plus the police, plus the people. Everybody, I swear to God, everybody's in on it. What else is there to do besides, you know,
a bunch of
pranks,
cattle.
Yeah. And it's the middle of winter. It's not like they're raising cattle. The cattle are like in a barn somewhere.
So you're proposing that the police are in on it.
It's when you're in a small community like that, everybody knows everybody.
Okay.
He's not some random guy. He's known by everyone.
That's true. He's a local.
And so everybody's in on it. That's the only explanation. And then the things on the ground in the backyard are just, they move something. Who cares what it is? But they're all in on it.
Now, what about his clothes being incredibly warm after laying in the snow?
In my mind, if everybody's in on it, they could just be lying. But also, you're trying to keep warm, you're shivering. It's possible.
It's very hard to debate they're lying. Like it's like always a valid, like,
does anyone ever come out and speak out about, hey, you know, it didn't actually happen that way?
Yes, 100%. A lot of paranormal things were hoaxes.
No, specifically for this case.
No.
Okay.
I want you to hold on to that.
I'll put it on the back burner for now.
Yeah. No, also, that's totally
being
totally
from
fair.
A rural area, this never happened. No one ever did.
Oh, you're saying you guys never.
No.
He's in on it. He's done a bunch of.
Are you from Liguria?
He's doing the long con.
No, my ancestry is from Sicily, so it's even worse.
Aren't you also Sicilian?
I'm from Tuscany.
As a little side note, color TV was adopted in Italy after the 1972 Olympics.
So they did have.
Okay.
So a little bit.
But. They probably had two channels. Like, it gets boring watching the same news programs.
I mean,
sure.
I think it's still the part of history where you have to make up your own fun, including a giant schizophrenic episode by the entire town.
That's fair. I want you to hold on to that. Use that, like, compare each new piece of info with that, and you let me know, like, how that fits in.
All right.
How many times have you tried to gather even 8 people in the same room?
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
But so, also, we live in a modern age where you have access of thousands of hours of things on your phone. Obviously, it's a lot harder to get people together. It's the middle of winter. There's maybe a handful of color TVs in the entire town.
Wait,
what else is there to do?
What is the TV thing about?
That's just like, what else is there to do besides have a giant prank in the middle of winter?
Mm. Like, you mean like for local, like to garner tourism?
Tourism or just something to do. I know in Italy, when it's sort of like the down season, there's not much going on. It's only, you see the same people at the same bars and at the same, you know, cafes at night. I can see this happening, especially because it's a little bit more remote. I looked up a map. It's away from the coast.
Let me pull a bit more
inward.
You guys might also want to pull up the Google Maps, the location, which I have lower in the Notion. It really is beautiful. And you could just see how remote, like I was trying to find the home.
It's in the middle of the mountains. There's nothing around it.
I was trying to find, like, it's far from the city of Genoa.
And it's not even like a huge city in Italy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is pretty rural.
I can only imagine, like, first of all, how scary it would be driving at night patrolling Torriglia on a moonless night.
Look at all these roads. They're all switchbacks.
What does that mean?
Like, you go this direction and then you do like a 180 turn and then you go back the other way. And that's what happens when you have to go up like a cliff face. You don't just drive straight up it. You go up and you snake up and down it.
It's like a zigzag.
That makes sense. Kind of. Yeah. Basically, you're zigzagging up the mountain.
Oh, so like the mountain is going.
The mountain's going up here,
you're going up it left and right.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, and you can imagine turns like this are.
I encourage you guys to zoom in anywhere on the street view and just look around. You could see like the hills in the distance. It's kind of crazy how hilly, how mountainous. Yeah. I want to go here. Anyway.
We gotta go find this guy's house.
Yeah.
Can I belabor this first story a little bit longer?
Okay. This is Frank, 1/20th, Frank, but go ahead.
Yes, I know. You said moonless night. Do you know, the theories that you have published on this subject? Why might there not be any moon in the sky, Frank?
Oh my God.
Because the aliens left the moon, Cameron, to go get resources.
Story? No.
The moon is actually a hollow spaceship that was damaged at some point in humanity's prehistory. The moon wasn't always there. It arrived. It's damaged. They've been repairing it all these thousands of years. One day it will leave when it's fully repaired. Aaron is proposing that the moonless night was moonless because the moon, aka the spaceship, came down.
So they're building us a new moon.
No, who's as in a new moon?
No.
As
no.
In
the moon is their spaceship.
As in,
it's like the Death Star.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That's gonna be so loud when you're that close.
Also, you're building us
in my life. I'm just sweating moon. While editing this.
They're all of you are wrong. Like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is what I'm hearing.
All of you are wrong. It's the Katsura Otoko.
What is that?
The moon yokai.
I think I get that at Wasabi.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, that was the moon yokai that would beckon you to look at him, and then you'd go crazy and die.
Like the man in the moon?
Yeah.
What are we talking about? Can we get serious here? We're here to talk about aliens and alien spaceships.
True. I just wanted to do a yokai.
Okay, the moon.
I just clicked back onto Notion, and it was the picture of Zanfretta. I was about to say, who is this?
What the hell is wrong? He's a handsome guy.
No, yes. You know? Yeah.
He kind of looks like an Italian Elvis.
Yeah, he's got the leather jacket.
Yeah.
Well, just wait. Just wait.
All right, I'll wait.
So, my friends, I just told you, well, I don't want to spoil the rest of this, but I will say that now, as we've clearly shown by discussing this for 20 minutes already, and I'm realizing I'm going to have to go through the rest pretty quickly because it's already 35 minutes into the episode, this would be a wacky story on its own if it ended there, right? We could discuss that for ages as we just have, but thankfully for me, looking for content today, it did not end there. Not at all. That was only the beginning. Later that month, on Christmas Eve Eve, so the 23rd of December, 1978.
Pizza night.
Which is pizza night in my family. Zanfretta agreed to be hypnotized by Dr. Mauro Moretti, a psychotherapist and member of the Italian Association of Medical Hypnosis in the city of Genoa. Now, before we talk about hypnosis and hypnotic regression, a note. I'm not sure how familiar you guys are. I know Nick will be familiar with this. Hypnosis has been used to help people come to terms with traumatic experiences for a long, long time. For example, it's very helpful with soldiers with intense PTSD, helping them overcome psychological issues, return to civilian life. And not all people are susceptible to hypnosis. I've heard from a professional hypnotist that's like 80-20, like 80% of people are not easily put under hypnosis, 20% of people are. Like Cameron, probably pretty susceptible. Me, not very susceptible.
What the heck, man?
My friend's dad.
I'm just was sitting here catching a stray.
What, Nick?
My friend's dad, when we were in high school, used to do like hypnotism stuff. He could hypnotize people.
Were you ever hypnotized?
No, I never wanted to be, but there were people who, like, not a problem, were hypnotized, and others, they were kind of in and out, but nothing stuck. So,
yeah.
It does happen.
My high school graduation, we hired a hypnotist, like, as a graduation party thing for the school. There was a hypnotist, and yeah, I was not able to be hypnotized, but other people were, and it was pretty convincing acting, if anything, but I believe in hypnotism.
Cameron, what do you think about hypnotism?
I believe that it is... I honestly don't know what I believe. I've never been to a hypnotist show. I don't really know that much about it.
There was some of the RPI. Have you ever go to those?
I've never been, no. I've never seen it. But it'd be cool if it worked on me. I think that'd be a fun thing to have happen to me, but
Definitely. I think he'd be going.
But you know, just back to my other point. What if they're just all in on it? And
they're all hypnotized by this guy.
Yes, exactly.
Now we're pulling in psychotherapists from the major city. Like, not just like the
country. Well, who is this guy? What's his credentials? Is he known to be a quack? Is he a respected businessman and member of the community?
He's a professional psychotherapist and member of the Italian Association of Medical Hypnosis in Genoa.
Is that a crack, like a quack institution?
Not from my understanding. A crack
institution?
Yeah. There is a later on, there's another scientist as well. And if,
are these like reputable scientists? Like, what are their credentials?
He's got a doctorate scientist? In psychotherapy?
I'm getting my doctorate. That doesn't mean I can say anything about anything.
That's a great point.
I make up shit all the time. Cut that out. Cut that out.
Not about biology, though.
Marvin, I hope you're listening. So, given that, being easily susceptible to hypnosis doesn't imply you're weak-willed or, you know, easily manipulated. It's literally just whether or not you can be put under hypnosis. Now, hypnosis, for what we care about, has been used over the years to help individuals recall what happened to them during episodes of missing time, where they have memory lapses spanning minutes or even hours during a traumatic event. So many alien encounter stories, they go to a hypnotist who puts them under and does a hypnotic regression and says, you know, what did you see? Tell me what you saw. And supposedly, they're able to uncover stuff that consciously they do not remember. However, back then it was more kind of like accepted, like whatever they said, it's like, oh, they're uncovering their memories. That's their memories. Nowadays, it's understood that hypnotized individuals can be very susceptible to direction or leading questions while they're under, right? So, for example, an interviewer might ask bad questions like, what did the aliens from outer space that you saw look like, right? Whereas they should be asking, describe what you saw. And so it seems like people under hypnosis, when asked to answer questions, sometimes will confabulate, make up stuff to fill in blanks, even if they are also recalling real memories. So always take what you hear from UFO encounterers, hypnotism stories with a grain or a tablespoon even of salt.
But what?
Why? Isn't that more salt?
What?
Why the whole tablespoon like pause?
What?
Like, yeah. You just say grain of salt. Like, why tablespoon of salt?
Because you should be even more.
Am I supposed to be accepting this or not? Because tablespoon is like, I would be accepting it more.
What?
No, yeah, a tablespoon is bigger than a grain.
Yes, but doesn't it?
Yeah, how
is it the salt?
The whole
isn't it less? More salt means you believe it less? Or is it?
No,
more
salt means more? The whole point is the grain of salt is so small that that's the value of what is being said.
No, really? It's about what you're believing is you're believing a grain of salt of
the whole thing. I thought it was literally the opposite. Like the salt is what you don't believe. I don't know. Okay.
I'm not an idiom expert, so.
Take your pick. Micro, what's the smallest unit of possible salt? Like a single grain, right?
A grain, I guess. I mean, theoretically, you can go down to like, you know, like NaCl crystal structures.
Take an NaCl crystal structure.
Tear your ACL and get on with the story.
Get abducted.
Yeah. All right.
Nice thing. I'm going to cut so much from this episode.
This is meant to be included. I'm adding flavor.
Yeah.
Yes. You're adding salt.
Isn't it umami?
Yeah.
Okay. No, you never mind.
Given what I just said, that salt, there is a lot better understanding nowadays. So I do think professional hypnotists nowadays are very understanding of that. And they really, if they're good, try not to ask leading questions. Now, I give this disclaimer because what you just heard is already difficult to believe. But what comes out of Zanfretta's hypnotic regressions will make you, want to turn off this podcast episode, probably.
No, I'm here today. You know,
you don't have a choice.
My source for a good chunk of this story is Rino De Stefano, who was a reporter. He was one of the only reporters at the time that took Zanfretta's story at face value and believed him and tried to look into it without bias. And he became really close to Zanfretta and followed him through this and even attended some of these hypnotic regressions. I believe he was actually the one that encouraged Infra to do this first one and to meet with Dr. Moretti. What came out of this first one was so bizarre that Reno DiStefano, whose website I have linked in the show notes, who I have to link because otherwise copyright, he says you have to list him as a source. He didn't take a transcription of this first one because he just thought it was too crazy to believe. But what he remembers is he was there during the hypnotic regression. He's lying prostrate on this bed, and he says that he was abducted by, quote, monsters about 10 feet tall with hairy green skin, yellow triangular eyes, and red veins across the forehead. And they brought him to a hot, luminous place, presumably aboard a spaceship, obviously, presumably above the spaceship that was the huge light, bigger than the house, and interrogated him and examined him. During that same first abduction, he claims, while under that the creatures told him they came from the planet Tetonia, which was in the third galaxy, and that, kind of worryingly, they want to talk with us and they will soon return in larger numbers. Now, they didn't speak Italian to Zanfreda, but they used a, quote, luminous device to translate what they were saying. And again, the full transcription of this just wasn't written down because DiStefano, the reporter, was like, what is going on?
Okay, wait a second. Hear me out. There are lots of abduction stories of foreign people where they say they didn't speak the language I speak, but they did have some sort of device to translate it. I've heard that before.
What do you make of that? What, do you expect the aliens to speak Italian? Like, perfectly? Like,
yeah.
I just don't expect this.
They're like, oh, Liguria.
I just don't expect it to come straight out of a Doctor Who episode. You know?
You feel like this is true? Well, which came first?
I mean, Doctor Who was, I think, out in the 60s. Originally, maybe 70s, but it's almost definitely out by the time this comes out. So,
but I mean, to use your own argument against you, they might not have even had access to Doctor Who.
I mean, I'm just saying it seems a little too far-fetched, perhaps. A luminous device to translate what they were saying.
Become an abduction story that's extremely sci-fi.
Yeah.
Which is why the reporter was like, what the hell is this?
The third galaxy? Like,
Tetonia?
That stuff third never galaxy? Heard of before. But I have it's heard insane. Of the like a translator device. That has come up in a handful of abduction stories.
It's called Google Translate on your phone.
Oh, true. My bad.
Think about it. How crazy of a concept is that? You pull out this little rectangular thing from your pocket.
This is crazier.
I mean, they had Star Trek too.
It translates.
Yeah, Star Trek was way ahead of its time with like the.
It does
the
feel Apple. Very like crappy sci-fi, like OG Star Trek.
Yeah, right? Like they had like the Apple like glasses thing where you put it on there and like you get like the augmented reality. Star Trek had that in like the 80s.
So it's like an episode of the Twilight Zone.
Exactly. They've had sci-fi stuff out and around for forever.
It is quite. I mean, what do you guys make of the description of the creature, right? So if we put together what he said under conscious memory.
That's also 10 feet tall. That's a little big for things that I've heard.
Green.
Where was hairy this? Green skin. Also a bit off from the typical alien encounter. Yellow triangular eyes.
Undulating skin.
Yellow triangular eyes.
Like he was
eyes.
Like really fat. Like he had like. It featured huge fat rolls.
I was saying undulating like a cuttlefish undulates like its color. I don't know.
Maybe that too.
I don't know.
I don't know.
But yeah, grabbing him on the shoulder.
It is a unique description.
It really is.
I don't think aliens are like universally like, yep, all aliens are exactly this description. Like,
isn't that weird?
Maybe from the third galaxy.
Okay, wait till
they
the
look
end.
Like this.
So this just gets crazier.
Well, then carry on, my wayward son.
Let's continue. Now, again, this would be crazy if it ended here, but it does not end here.
Of course.
Because this poor man, just 3 days later.
So, Boxing Day, day after Christmas.
The day after Christmas, 1978, December 26th, disappears again while patrolling. This time around, it's 11:45 p.m. He's in his little Fiat, once again, as usual. Now, this time he's inside the Bargagli, that's probably not how you say it, tunnel near the Scofera Pass, which is a different, presumably still a different location. And he's exiting a tunnel when he suddenly loses control, he reports, obviously, he loses control of his car. And it turns out of the tunnel on its own, despite him slamming on the brakes and trying to turn the steering wheel. It ignores the brakes and the steering wheel and starts driving on its own. It turns up a steep road and just books it. It goes for an entire mile and enters a really thick patch of fog. Now, happens to be on call with the radio operator at the time, and he's saying, he's freaking out over, you know, imagine like a muffled radio. You're the operator, you're like, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, my car. Yeah. Oh my God. He's losing control of his car. He's like, oh, this fog, whatever that sounds like in Italian, probably funnier. It goes for an entire mile before suddenly slamming to a stop. Now it comes to a stop so quickly, poor Zanfretta. He's flung forward and he smashes his head on the steering wheel.
Whiplash.
He gets whiplash. At that moment, he calls back to the radio operator. And this time, in an oddly quiet, controlled voice, and says, "The car has stopped. I saw a bright light. Now I am getting out." Oh, once again, the guards are sent or dispatched to check in on him. And they find him, this time over an hour later, like an hour and a half later, they finally find him around 1:10 a.m. He's found on the ground in a field alongside the road, shaking, quivering, and crying, saying to himself, "They say I must leave with them. What about my children? I don't want to. And again, bizarrely, the guards reported that his clothes were warm and dry, and so was his head, despite it raining that night. Again.
Like, currently?
That's what I'm not sure. I guess it had just stopped raining, because obviously, they don't report that they're seeing the rain and it's not affecting him, mm-hmm. but it was raining for a while, and he is not wet. And he's on the ground. So it's like,
all right.
And he's warm again. Again, the police are called. And again, they do an investigation. Now, I think this either leans credence to Cameron's entire conspiracy angle, or it is a local town and they trust that he's not crazy and they just respect him enough to take him seriously. Right. Mm-hmm. So it kind of could go either way. They do another investigation and they found that the Fiat, having been in the cold and rain for a long time, despite that, its roof was really hot to the touch, as if it was left in the sun on a summer day all day. And the car's interior was like an oven, again, like a really hot summer day. Even weirder, all around the car were enormous footprints. And by enormous, I mean they measured them 20 inches long by 8 inches wide, with a distinct empty spot between sole and heel. They also found Sanfretta's gun, a Smith & Wesson 38 Special, which is a really tiny little revolver, which you can see down in the Notion, which we'll have in the show notes, like a classic little tiny little revolver. And they saw that it had been fired 5 times. Now, Cameron, here we go. This police report was written up, taken seriously. It made its way to the local government of the city of Genoa, ended up getting passed around. What do we do with this? What is this? Ended up with Luciano Di Noto, a substitute attorney of the Italian Republic, who passed on to an investigating magistrate, who finally passed on to another magistrate, who officially deemed 1 year later that the likelihood that these reported events actually occurred was, quote, good. to the entire Italian Republic's government, said, "This probably happened." As in, the police report was truthful. They found Zanfretta in shock on the ground, footprints, hot car. It should be said that there were also many other reported UFO sightings over Italy that entire December, to the point where it was discussed in Italian Congress. Like, what do we do? And last thing I'll say for Aaron, go ahead, is this second encounter was the one that really blew up, like, nationally, and aroused a lot of publicity, negative publicity, unfortunately, for Zanfretta. So what do we think about the second encounter?
So did they ever find, like, the bullet casings?
I'm not sure, like, how they determined.
Did he shoot the gun?
You'd probably have to read the police report.
Yeah, I wonder.
Okay. Yeah, where are these pictures of these footprints that presumably were taken? And where is any of the, you know, police evidence?
These are all, like, public records you can find. There are pictures from the reporter, Reno, that he took of the gun here with the bullets missing, of Zanfretta during the hypnotic treatments.
Yeah, but I'm not as interested in the gun. Like, I believe that the gun was fired, but where and at what? Because I didn't hear you mention in the story that he ever fired the gun.
You're right. He doesn't know at the time. He doesn't have any memory of the gun being fired. They just find when they arrive, which again is after a lot of time, from 11:45 p.m. to 1:10 a.m. Between that time, the gun was fired 5 times.
And it didn't necessarily say by him. Could have been the alien.
Well, my friend, again, to determine what happened, and because his employer now is a little worried about him, they encourage him to go back to Dr. Moretti and do another hypnotic regression.
It's the details are starting to come back to me of the craziness that goes on. I think I remember some of the parts that happened next. So, I mean, it is just crazy. Like, he was dry after it allegedly rained. There are these giant footprints. The
car is hot to the touch. He's hot to the touch. The police,
like, it. I mean, and to, like, Cameron's point, it would be so hard for years and years to go by, and somehow, like, dozens and dozens of people keep the same story straight.
It made its way to the Italian, like, the country.
Like the federal government.
The federal government, the federal level. So it is pretty far to take a prank, I'll say.
Okay. So I'm gonna walk my hypothesis back of what's happening here.
Very scientific.
Yeah. Need a different p-value.
Yeah. Originally, I could see it happening. 42 townspeople, I could see them, you know, having a practical joke. From here on out, it's basically just Zanfretti saying things. The, like, only thing that people,
weird.
Yeah, but being in weird situations and saying stuff is happening and he's getting messages and things. The only thing that other people have experienced was a bright light. And so,
Just like the car, the footprints in the car and his body.
Footprints are a little weird, and his body being really warm. I'm kind of starting to maybe think that maybe he is having some sort of episode on some sort of illicit material. And because I know when you consume a large amount of, you know, drugs or alcohol, your body gets very hot. And so I can see that being the case where he's basically hotboxing the car with his own body heat, at least a part of it. And then, I don't know, maybe like a comet or a shooting star or something lit up the sky. It's possible. Stuff like that has happened before.
And he's going, like, just, he's like mentally breaking down. He's going full schizo.
Yeah, maybe he saw that shooting star like everybody else saw. Hook, it.
Full schizo, Italian.
And from there, his mental decline goes down, especially after he gets, like, basically suggested by the hypnotist to believe sort of one set of things happened to him. And so these repressed memories are sort of feeding into this idea that all this terrible stuff is happening to him. Footprints are still weird. I don't know what to make of that right now.
Yeah. He was also apparently dry, right? on the road. He wasn't just warm. He was also dry.
Yeah. I mean, you could hide in your car and then get out right before the people also, show up. Like, there are
for the illicit substance thing, if he's a security guard and has a patrol car, that's probably not his car, like his patrol car. Like, I'm assuming people switch out the cars at some point. Someone would, if there was something, if he's like actually going insane, is he going to remember to like dispose of any drug paraphernalia before they like check out the car?
I don't know if it would be, I don't know why it would be his car. It's like 1978 Italy. I don't know if they have like company cars that
I don't know, this sort of rural security
business would
in
be
in some of the other encounters, because there are more. He is not in the car. He's like on the motorcycle doing his job. So yeah, who knows? But
how does this guy keep a job is my other question.
I know, right? It's crazy. His employer.
Why does he keep his
sticks
job?
With him?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're right. Why is he keeping this job where he's out
in the middle of the
he's
night?
He's out in the middle of the night on these roads
alone.
It's a good question, because there are also times where people have encounters and maybe they're real, and then they get a lot of attention, and then they feel the need to keep having encounters.
But
to keep the
attention. For Zanfretta, it seems like he hates it.
It does seem like he hates it, but I mean,
maybe he's just some like weird masochist.
Maybe, but it doesn't end here, because he returns for another hypnotic regression.
All right, right.
Now this time, he's trying to clear his name, so he agrees for it to be recorded, publicized, broadcast on local TV, and hundreds of thousands of people tune into this.
It's That's like a big deal.
A national event. While under regression this time, he recalled being stripped of his clothes and forced by his abductors, the same creatures as before, to wear a strange helmet, which let him understand their language, but also caused him terrible pain. Now, he also recalled, Aaron, remember, this is for you, one of the creatures taking his gun and firing bullets into a, quote, panel. And he got the impression it was like to see like what it did, or like how dangerous it was to them. Maybe like they were just testing it. So that's the explanation for why there were five shots. They seemed to tell him that they needed him for something, or that he needed to go with them somewhere. And he was extremely scared, saying, I know you need me, but I don't want to. I like to be alone. I have two children. I feel good this way. And after all, you're not human beings. You're horrible. With some ellipses in the middle there. So that's just an excerpt. So going back and forth, like, no, leave me alone. Please leave me alone. Now, I have the video of this on YouTube published by DiStefano. And it's just eerie. It's 53 minutes of him muttering. And there's English subtitles. Okay, I just clicked at a random point, 13 minutes in, and the subtitles for Zanfretta say, "Kangaroo, answer. The car is moving by itself. There is a lot of smog. Can't see anything." So it's just Zanfretta with his eyes closed, laying down in black and white, really bad audio, going, So if you ever have 53 minutes of your time,
don't watch this.
And I don't know if you get anything from it, but it's weird. It's recorded. It's publicized. This was on TV.
Did you reach out for Reno DiStefano for comment?
No, I don't know if he's still alive, because he's presumably older.
He was alive 12 years ago, and he looks old in the picture.
Yeah. He looks kind of old.
I mean, if he's around 79, he's at least,
Here's another quote, and I just clicked through. They talked by a light coming from their mouth. Bad. They talked very badly. It's hurting me. Put it off. No, I cry. Put it off. I'm sleepy. So it's just full schizo. Like, what the hell is going on?
So if I wanted to induce a schizophrenic hallucination, that's what I would watch?
Yes. If you want to go crazy, just play that while you fall asleep tonight. All
right, perfect. I'll do it. I'll let you know how it works.
It might be ASMR for some people.
Yeah, probably right. For the aliens, they're like, I remember the good old days, the 70s. So this made him a really well-known figure and just increased the ridicule like exponentially. It became so bad for him that he said, if I could have, I wouldn't have reported my experiences now that I see the consequences. After attempting to clear his name as not being insane, Dr. Giorgio Gianotti, a prominent neurologist in Genoa, examined him, did the full examination, and exclaimed, "The man is in a state of shock, but he is perfectly sane." He was also examined by a famous psychoanalyst, considered the father of psychoanalysis in Italy and was also deemed totally sane. This helped his image in the public eye a little bit, but he still faced a lot of evidently unwanted attention.
And I know I've been a skeptic of this guy, but like, I feel for him because it's only just starting for this poor dude. There's three more encounters in hypnosis sessions, and it's only getting crazier for here. But you're gonna have to tune in next week to find out what happens.